Hello, everyone. This is Shelley Spates again with another episode of A Nest for Every Nester. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm excited to bring to you my special guest, Mr. Pedro Perez of the Charlotte Family Housing. He is the executive director there, and he's going to be talking to us about the resources that Charlotte Family Housing is bringing to the Charlotte community. And during this unprecedented time with pandemic and COVID-19, it is really important for me to make sure the Charlotte community knows what resources are available to them if they should need them during this time of uncertainty. We have a wonderful, maybe 30-minute conversation about the services and programs they offer. We also talk about some of the issues in the housing sector in Charlotte from his perspective and from the perspective of the individuals that he helps and families. Right now is one of those times where I feel everyone needs to know that Charlotte Family Housing and their other partner organizations are out there, and the corporations that are helping them to continue their wonderful work to prevent homelessness in the Charlotte community. Hello, Mr. Perez, and welcome to A Nest for Every Nester podcast. Thanks for accepting my invitation.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege and an honor to have this opportunity to share with your audience and with the community of Charlotte the work that Charlotte Family Housing does. I have been the executive director for Charlotte Family Housing since June of 2018, and it is part of my personal mission and personal devotion to paying forward a debt that I have. And that debt is that my mother and I and my brother were in extreme poverty because my father left and left us alone, abandoned us. And she then had to figure out what to do.
Right.
And move us out of poverty. And she was successful at doing that. You know, she arrived here at 14 from Puerto Rico, the island we call Boricua, an Afro-Caribbean Taino Indian, which is what I ethnically am. It was a struggle for her and my father to navigate being people of color in this nation. And part of the reason why he wasn't successful initially as a father and as a man, because he was dealing with that trauma and he chose to self-medicate. And unfortunately, that led to some violence, and it led to his abandonment of his family. My mother then chose that by the time she was 17, she was married to him. By 19, she was divorced and had two boys. But to make a long story bearable, she chose to not stay there. She chose work. She chose to get educated. She learned English, got a GED, went on and got a associate's degree and became a licensed practical nurse, continued her education, got a BA and became a registered nurse. And by the time she retired, she was had a master's degree in psychiatric nursing and was the administrator of nurses in a large New York City hospital.
Wow.
It is every time I look at a dictionary and it says hero, it is her 5 foot frame and face that I see. And that I have modeled myself. Now, you know, interestingly enough, there is a phrase that I've recently learned by watching a film called Broken Places. And Broken Places is talking about adverse childhood experiences, of which I experienced myself, and so did my brother. And the phrase is a metaphor for how resiliency manifests itself. And it is the difference between a dandelion and an orchid. An orchid, a beautiful flower, but it needs very special care, very special environment, or it won't survive. A dandelion can grow anywhere under almost any circumstances. My brother turned out to be an orchid. My mother and I were dandelions. And so my brother didn't make it out of poverty. He is no longer with us, and he's been gone for a long
Sorry
time.
To hear that.
Thank you. Because of some of the decisions he made, which resulted in some engagements that really were not productive. And so his life ended. So, so because she was able to move us out of poverty, I know she went hungry so that I could eat and my brother could eat. Given that experience, given my own personal journey following hers, I became successful. And because of that success, because of social capital that people shared with me and shared with her, I feel that I have a debt to pay forward, and I'm paying that debt forward. I've been paying that debt gladly, happily, for the last almost my entire adult life. And Charlotte Family Housing is an organization that helps empower working families that are experiencing homelessness. And I helped them to achieve long-term self-sufficiency through shelter, housing, supportive services, and advocacy. And let me repeat, these are working families.
Right.
We see them every day. They're driving our buses,
right,
our school buses. They are bank clerks. They're serving us food. They're serving us coffee. Every single day, they're hard at work, making oftentimes just above minimum wage.
Right.
And because of that, and because of their low wages, I mean, many of them are struggling to get out of poverty. One quick point. It would take a person earning the minimum wage 109 hours a week, working 109 hours a week to afford the average rent here. And frankly, what they can afford at minimum wage in terms of rent is around $377 or so per month. There are very, 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 very few apartments that are affordable. Mm-hmm. The statistic is somewhere between 20 and 30,000 affordable housing units are what this community needs.
Yeah, it's a deficit.
The work that has to be done, and I am grateful for Charlotte, what it has attempted to do over these last couple of years, and frankly, over the last 4 or 5 years, ever since the Keith Scott, tragic death at the hands of police, this city has come together and said, we're not going to abide by that. And in fact, after the Getty report came out and said that the city was 50th last of comparable cities in terms of upward mobility, this city said it could not stand, it had to change. And so it created the Leading and Opportunity Committee, which created that report. And we at Charlotte Family Housing have been adhering to much of the tenets within that, trying to help these families achieve that kind of self-sufficiency through empowerment, through advocacy, and through those things that I mentioned earlier.
That's just amazing. And think about it, as a realtor, my focus and my career focus is to find people their home, whether they're buying or renting. And I would be amiss if I didn't look at the paradigm to that situation, which is homelessness, and how we as realtors in this community can have a focus on that to maybe assist as a voice, maybe to just be just a helping hand in what you do. I know that there's some phenomenal statistics of the families that you've helped, how many that have gone through your programs and have been successfully moved into their homes and are paying the rents or have actually found their way to home ownership. So can you talk a little bit more about that and how the community can rally around the efforts and how those people in the community now that are experiencing the possibility of homelessness, how they can become in contact with your organization?
Well, that's a multiple questions.
Throw it all out at you at once.
I'll try to answer it in the order that you presented, or at least try to answer all of the different questions you asked in that. Let me just start with our numbers. Since 2011 or so, when we were formed out of three different organizations that came together to form Charlotte Family Housing, we've served over 1,100 families and well over 2,400 children since then.
Wow.
And most recently, in the last fiscal year, we served 207 families and 432 children. Mm. One thing that I want to add to that in terms of statistics, because that really demonstrates the journey that families can get on and the work that we're doing, the thing that gives me the most inspiration and the most joy is that last year, I asked this question that I wanted to be asked in a survey. We've been doing surveys for the last 8+ years, but we never asked this question, which is, have you been able to apply for, been approved for a mortgage application and actually then gone on to purchase your own home? We have had, since asking that question last spring, over 54 families have told us they have either been successful at applying and getting the approval for a home, and even more importantly, actually purchasing their own home. Frankly, I can tell this story because he has given me permission to tell his story.
Okay.
We have a board member now who is on our board, and his name is Lamont Simmons. He's an incredible father and has done an incredible job in healing himself and his children. He went through a terrible divorce, got depressed, lost his job, lost his home, ended up being homeless. And when he tried to find shelter where he could go as a father and as a man, they would not allow him to bring his children. So he had to leave his children with some relatives, and he slept in his car. He finally connected with us. We keep families together. We work on keeping families together. And our definition of a family is very broad. It's an adult over 18 with a dependent child under 18. And parents can be, well, however we define parents these days. It can be multi-generational families. It can be a mother and a mother, a father and a father, or a father and a mother. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes we have grandparents that are acting as parents for their children. So it's one of the things that we try to do. So he went on, became an electrician, started his own business, and was able to, in January of 2019, purchase his own home. And that's joined our board. This man has done an incredible job of healing himself and healing his families, and exemplifies the work we're trying to do, and is among those 54 families that I mentioned that were able to move right from homelessness over a period of time, 2 years in our program and then 2 years after our program, to purchase his own home. And these families are doing the same thing.
Amazing. That's simply amazing. And I think during, you know, this time period of what we're going through COVID-19, I would believe that there's some sort of impact that's happening that your organization is trying to meet a demand with. And I mean, I would love to learn more about what your organization is doing in that regard. I think I was watching the news yesterday, and one of the broadcasts was about how during the COVID pandemic, the early onset of it, there was a stay of evictions, and there wasn't going to be evictions during a certain time period, but that time period is running out. And there's a lot of the pandemic unemployment assistance that was put into play that at the end of this month won't be there. So what are we as a community supposed to be doing if there's this influx of a homeless population in Charlotte?
My biggest fear right now, and I'll explain to you what we have done to pivot during this pandemic period, mm-hmm. in order to serve families that are impacted severely by COVID-19 and the economic downturn that's occurred as a result of that. But my biggest fear right now is that there's going to be a tsunami of mm-hmm. eviction, and thereby a tsunami of homelessness that is going to exacerbate what already exists in both in this city, in this county, and nationally. Okay. This is not a unique problem to Charlotte, to Mecklenburg. This is a national problem, and we need national, comprehensive, coordinated solutions for this.
Right.
The way we pivoted, we had a definition of what a working family was, and a working family had to work 30 hours in order to qualify as part of the qualification for our program. Well, we expanded that definition, recognizing that some families were going to have reduced hours, or lose the job entirely, or if they were promised a job, may not be hired because that company didn't open. Right. And so what we did is that we expanded our definition of working families to include those individuals, and they could still enter into our program so long as they could show us a previous check stub that would allow us to calculate their budget to determine how much they could afford in terms of their rent. Because one of the requirements is we ask them to participate in our program by contributing 30% of their income towards the rent, and we subsidize the rest for the 2 years so that they're in our program.
Okay.
In the instances in which the families were not working at all, we covered 100% of their rent. We covered their utility payments, so they would not have crippling debt at the end of this period. And we assisted them with food, with masks. In some instances, we bought washer dryers. And let me explain why we bought washer dryers. Imagine a single mom with a toddler and an infant having to catch a bus to go to the laundromat. And in that, having to do that, she'd have to pack snacks, entertainment, reading materials, the laundry itself, and then take a few hours to go to that laundromat, time that she could be used or he could use to educate themselves or to work, care for children. So we found that if we could purchase these items, and it was the generosity of Lowell's, the generosity of many churches here that allowed us to be able to purchase that, so that this mother or this father that was single trying to take care of business for their children could actually use that time productively. If you and I presume you have a washer dryer in your apartment complex or in your own home.
Right.
You throw your clothes, I throw my clothes in the washer, I walk away, do other chores, do other work, educate myself. It rings, I come in, I put in the dryer, I continue on. I'm using those hours productively. Imagine having to sit in the laundromat, particularly during the COVID pandemic, in which you're not sure who else in that laundromat may be shedding virus. So we did that to protect the families and to help those families become socially mobile. Those are the kinds of things that we attempted to do.
That is amazing. So you talk about the program, because I think that's important. What are the pillars of the program? What does the program actually take a client through all the way through the two-year program that you have set up? What does that look like?
Well, the very first instance is obviously applying and qualifying for our program. As I mentioned, we have some criteria for qualifying. One of them, they have to be a working family.
Right. Now,
expanded that definition, as I mentioned to you. They had to have a child that was under 18 or support that child. They could not be actively engaged in the disease of addiction.
Okay.
And so, and then we would work with them if they, if because we randomly would test families, because we want those families, the parents, to be sober when they're dealing with their children. That's the best way to raise a child.
Right.
And so we then refer them to a drug rehabilitation center and work with them as they did that. In terms of criminal record, felonies, we would not permit particular felonies, those that had to do with child abuse or sexual abuse. Any other crime, we would take on a case-by-case basis based upon frequency and recency.
Okay.
If they had a pending charge, they would not qualify for our program, because if they may, in the court proceeding, end up not really needing our residence, because they would be, sadly, maybe happy. Serve a jail sentence or something like that. So we're very careful about those things. Once they come in our program, we assign a clinically licensed social worker to work on trauma, to help them deal with trauma-informed care, because we're committed to helping these families heal from that trauma. We would also assign them at some point a housing coordinator, which will help them identify apartments that they could afford. We work with over 70 landlords in 22 zip codes in this community to help them find houses and apartments that are affordable. In our program, we have educational requirements that they must participate in, financial literacy for themselves and their children. We have partners that do that. We collaborate with lots of other nonprofits and lots of other organizations. Just one quick definition. If we define poverty as a lack of access to resources, then what we do very carefully is help them connect to the resources that they need. We meet families where they are, and they help guide us as we help them. We walk beside them. This is not a handout. This is a hand up.
That's amazing. So someone is in need of your assistance. They just contact you by phone. They go on the website and gather information.
They can do that. We get a lot of referrals by other clients that have worked with us. We modified our online application to make it easier so that much of it could be done virtually. We currently, during this COVID period, are doing lots of virtual interviews. In fact, the entire office, except for myself, for the most part, periodically people come in, but we're working remotely except at our shelter.
Right.
Obviously, you can't work remotely from a shelter. But what we did there was, in order to protect our staff and those families, we reduced our capacity at the shelter itself. And then families that had to come into our program when we didn't have shelter space, we would have them go through the shelter phase by paying for a hotel room where they could stay.
Okay.
And then once at the hotel room, once they were ready and had the training that they would need and got the educational skills that they would need, as I mentioned, financial literacy and other things, we would then assign a housing coordinator who would then work with a landlord to get them into an apartment or into a single family home that they can afford. Again, one of the requirements while in the shelter phase was being able to save for the first month's rent and deposit. And so we required them to save 30% of their income towards that goal. And then once in an apartment, they pay that 30% of their income, and we cover the subsidies, and we get help from both the city and the county and the Foundation for the Carolinas a way home to cover that subsidy.
Okay. And so that's what, you know, one of the things that I was looking at is like, what is your support base and how does the community rally around you, knowing that we may see something unprecedented in this time period? How does the community rally around your organizations, and organizations like yours are going to have to fill in this enormous void? What do we need to be doing?
Well, I can tell you what has been done, and we're extremely fortunate. We have a tremendous amount of support from corporations.
Okay.
Foundations, from individuals, and from the faith-based community. Mm-hmm. The generosity of this community is unbelievable. And both in terms of time, money, and volunteering. Now, clearly now, because of COVID, we have not allowed actual physical volunteering, and we're working on creating a virtual platform for volunteering. Mm-hmm. So now what citizens of this community can do is petition their politicians, petition their employers, and work on helping agencies like ours to have the financial support necessary and to create collaborations that are necessary to achieve this. We cannot do this alone.
No, we cannot.
It's a community effort. And we didn't get here alone. And it's going to take time. We didn't arrive to where we're at without the community either. And you know this expression, there is this African proverb that it takes a village to raise a child.
Right.
Well, the converse is also true. It takes a village to fail a child. Mm-hmm. And so I want to be part of the first, which is assisting and helping our community raise children so that we can end poverty, we can end homelessness. I certainly do not want to be part of a village that fails to raise a child.
Right.
So that's, I mean, those are the things that individuals can do. And the other thing is to educate themselves on who is actually homeless. There is a large spectrum, a continuum of homelessness. Most of us, unfortunately, think of homelessness when we go on a corner and we see some person standing there asking for donations for food. And then we wonder why. And we think, well, maybe this person is chronically homeless because of an addiction issue, a mental health issue. Who knows? Well, there are lots of families that are homeless, and we never think about that. So right. What the community can do is educate themselves on what that spectrum is and how they can engage in a particular sector. We serve working families. The men's shelter assists families and individuals, men primarily. The Salvation Army assists families and individuals as well. So there's lots of different organizations that are doing their part, but they're also doing it within a particular part of that continuum.
Right.
And together, we then help to resolve and mediate this incredible crisis that we're facing that's going to get even worse if we don't take steps to change it.
Right.
And right now, part of that is helping us to heal and from the COVID pandemic by being responsible as community members to engage in healthy practices that protect us.
Right.
You know, healthy practices that we do now, which is we put our seatbelts on because we know if we don't, we might crash and it might injure us or we might lose control and injure someone else.
Right.
Well, the practices now that we ought to be engaging in terms of physical distancing, in terms of mask wearing, in terms of being conscious of who you're engaging with and who you're partnering with. Those are the things that I think the community can continue to do. Many in our community are doing that, and I am so grateful and thankful for the tremendous support this community has provided the families that we serve.
That's amazing, and so true. I know early on in our conversation, you had mentioned, I mean, I know COVID kind of puts this kind of cloud over normal situations that we need to be focusing on. But COVID has all of our attention right now, but there was still a problem within our cities and surrounding Charlotte metro area. And part of, you know, what I want to do on this podcast is to highlight what was already present. So we're not, when we get over this, we're still working towards solving those problems within the community that were already present. So from your point of view, working within, you know, this field, what do you think Charlotte needs to do in order to meet that deficit of affordable housing?
Well, what it has been doing so far, you know, so in 2018, 2019, there was a community read of The Color of Law. Mm-hmm. And that is a book that talks about redlining and what redlining means. The more educated we are on these structural disparities and discrepancies and frankly racism and discrimination that occurs that has permeated our system, the more we heal from that, the more we resolve that and change those policies, the better off we're going to be as a community. The more we help these families achieve that self-sufficiency, the more they're going to be able to help their children gain a productive life. And I know that every working family and every poor family, including my own, did not want to, do not want to, be poor, do not want to be homeless. We want to change that. We just need to share the resources that are available to us, both collectively and individually. And if we can educate ourselves on what these issues are, if we can then, through that education, ensure that we're influencing our policymakers, mm-hmm. our politicians, and our governmental officials to engage in equitable policies that help families, the better off we will all be as a community.
Right. Because one of the things that I meet in my field is there's a lot of people, a lot of individuals, they may not be homeless. I mean, they may be renters or people that just haven't gone into the home ownership process. But there's this ultimate fear that I've gotten from clients that I've talked to, the fear of this, of just buying a home, or the fear of going through the process of getting a mortgage. What type of processes and procedures do you put together in your program to give individuals an understanding of what is out there for them? Because there are grants to buy homes that can cover most of your down payment and your closing costs. But, you know, of course, there's a credit limit that must be met, a minimum. So do you incorporate some of those ideals and information regarding the home buying process to those that are in your program?
What we incorporated, as I mentioned to you, one of the courses that we asked our families to participate in skill development that we asked them is financial literacy. And as part of that financial literacy learning is understanding your credit rating. Mm-hmm. And how important that is for you to be able to, both in terms of getting a job, because now jobs check your credit rating,
right,
in terms of being able to afford an apartment, because the apartment owner is going to check your credit rating, and banks are going to check it when they're trying to determine whether or not you qualify for a mortgage. So that kind of education is what we help our families to understand. As they improve their credit rating, they then can improve their opportunities to get loans, mm-hmm. to be accepted in a job, to move up in organizations. That kind of education is important. And so we work very closely with a number of, for instance, Habitat for Humanity. We have an ongoing MOU with them. And what they have allowed us to do is, through that MOU, is they have an orientation program that families and individuals have to go through for several months before they qualify for their program. We're able to do that within our own program, so that once our families graduate from our program, that's a hurdle they don't have to overcome. They're already qualified to get on Habitat for Humanity's list. We're working with a number of apartment complexes and owners and managers, and both large and small. At the moment, what we've done is pivoted towards homelessness prevention by helping preventing evictions. And so mm-hmm. we have asked these large apartment owners and managers to pre-screen families based upon the criteria that we provided them, and then refer those families to us while they're still in that apartment, because right now there are lots of families that are living and not being able to afford to pay their rent, and because of the moratorium are not being evicted. Now, mm-hmm. fact of the matter is that moratorium will be lifted at some point.
Right.
And the rent will still be due.
Right. That's the point.
Will still be due. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that we're making sure of is that we're preparing those families as we bring them into our program to meet that. That's why I mentioned to you before that with the COVID impact on families that lost jobs or had reduced hours, we increased the amount of subsidies. We increased what we covered in terms of expenses until they get on their feet. And then we slowly ramp them back up to be able to contribute their share of supporting themselves and moving forward. And so as we can do that with managers of apartment complexes and with other landlords, we can help to resolve this problem and maybe mitigate how many times we'll end up in that tsunami that I'm talking about that I sadly know is coming.
Right, right. So if I understand you correctly, families that are currently living in their homes, but they're at risk for eviction once the moratorium is lifted, they can contact your organization and, of course, qualify through your qualification procedures. And you're working with landlords to make sure that they can flow into your program.
Yes. If again, we ask the landlords to pre-screen these families.
Okay.
Make sure that it's as a result of COVID-19 job loss.
Right.
Not because of other reasons.
Okay.
And so if they are pre-screened, based upon what the landlord sees. Then we do a much more thorough screening to determine whether they will qualify for our program. And if they qualify for our program, then these families, we will then pick up and subsidize their rent. We will keep them in. It's a win-win-win.
Yeah.
Landlord wins, the family wins, and we win from this perspective. We are able to execute our mission of assisting working families that are experiencing homelessness.
Right, right. Because the landlord also is a business, and they could be a small landlord. It could be a small business that right. is currently also being affected negatively because of COVID-19. So with CFHH putting themselves within the middle of that is actually assisting more than just the person maybe experiencing the risk of homelessness, which is amazing to me.
The community, because obviously, you know, when you, as you know, we talked about those 54 families that were qualified for a mortgage or had actually purchased their own home. Well, when you own a home, you've got other expenses and you're going to spend money
right.
in the community because you want your property to look good. So you're either going to buy a lawnmower to mow your lawn. You're going to buy other things to keep your home well. You know, there's a benefit to the rest of the community as we increase homeownership.
Right.
We increase the livability of this community. We right. change communities when we create greater homeownership. You know, if you look at Greer Heights and you look at the Sugar Creek community and Hidden Valley, if we can increase homeownership, if we as a community can help these communities lift up, then that's the things that we need to do. And I can tell you that this city has done an incredible job, and so has the county, in focusing on trying to change it. Here's an example of what the city and the county have done. Recognizing that during this period of time, there were going to be people that were living in hotels. And when you live in a hotel and that is your primary address, tenant rights attach. You cannot be evicted without a hearing. And some hotel managers were attempting to evict those families that were not paying because of COVID.
Right.
Well, a consortium was developed by the county that Charlotte Family Housing was a part of, that the men's shelter was a part of, that the Salvation Army was a part of, the Crisis Ministry, and many other nonprofits were a part of in educating the families that were there that said, you have rights, legal aid assisted with that education, and also educating the managers of those hotels to explain to them, here are the rights these tenants have, and you cannot evict simply because they're not paying as a result of COVID. If it's some other issue, well, that's a different story.
Right.
So these are some of the things that this community has been doing and should continue to do as we move forward, because this, you know, the underlying situation, COVID has exacerbated the gaps that exist.
Absolutely.
It's brought it to the surface, as has the tragic deaths.
Right.
Police that have occurred. We have this compound multi-virus that we're dealing with, the virus of structural racism, the virus of homelessness, the virus of inequities that exist in terms of income distribution, in terms of opportunities that we can resolve if we have the will to do so. And this community appears to have that will.
That's amazing. And I guess putting it into my ballpark as a realtor and in the real estate business and the business of buying and selling homes and renting to renters, you know, where should our focus be when you're talking about those systemic things that have transgressed? How should we be focused? Because our tenet is fair housing. We go into everything, you know, supposed to move into everything with, you know, the fair housing agenda at, you know, the forefront. Oftentimes you hear about the systemic things like redlining, as well as the way school districts are set up and funded and things of that nature. So even when you're helping a individual come out of abject poverty, there's, depending on where they live and the taxes they pay for the schools in their county or their zip code, it's the school system also has an effect on where you live and how you're educated and where that education takes you. So you've said so many things that I agree with, and I just wanted to kind of get your thought and opinion on that.
Well, zip code shouldn't be the determinant of your social mobility.
Mm-hmm.
Your zip code should not be your destiny. And the way that that can change is, first of all, as you just mentioned, the fact of the matter is that property taxes support schools. That's how we fund our schools. Should we fund them that way? Should that be the way we fund? Is there not an inherent inequity in funding schools based upon property tax? Is that not an inherent inequity in the way we support entrepreneurial opportunities in particular zip codes? Mm-hmm. We can change that. We can educate. You have the capacity as a realtor to educate the clients that you meet and to educate others about the resources that you mentioned, that there are, in fact, grants that may be available, that there are, in fact, banks that may assist with a number of ways of helping a family achieve home ownership or at least renting. Not every family wants to own a home. Not every family, you know, as an elder, I had to make a decision. When I moved here, did I want to buy a home or did I want to rent? And you know, in some instances, renting is easier because I don't have to do more law. I don't have a whole bunch of other stuff to do. I can call the landlord and go, hey, my pipe in my bathroom is broken. Come and fix it.
Right.
As opposed to if I own the home, I've got to hire a plumber to fix it, an expense I may not be prepared to use. So educating them on, you know, the notion of home ownership is important, but it's not for everyone. But having, as you phrase, a nest for nesters.
Right.
Mm-hmm. is important. We all want to have a safe home to live in, whether we own it or not. We want to learn how to afford it, and we want to learn how to be good neighbors. And you can assist, and your colleagues can assist, and the rest of the community can assist in educating on what those processes are and how to gain that kind of ability to maintain your home and to find out how to gain resources and grants and other things that are out there for families.
Right. Well, I definitely want to be a part of, you know, what, you know, CFH is doing. I personally think it's just amazing and wonderful, the impact that you're making in the community, especially along with the organizations and the corporations that support your organizations and other organizations in the city like yours. But in closing, is there anything that you would like to get out to the audience more about CFH and more about what the mission is right now during this pandemic?
Well, I, in the first, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you specifically, and thank Charlotte. This community, I'm a national consultant with the AHA process, and that is an organization that helps other organizations navigate individuals that want to help people that are in poverty by bringing folks together. And as I traveled across the country doing these presentations, this city has chosen to do things that many other cities have not chosen to do. And I think that the Leading on Opportunity report, we need to support that. We need to help actualize that report. We need to advocate so that the rest of our community is educated on that, on those policies, and actually put power behind it and have corporations and individuals and schools as a community come together to fulfill the tenets of that report so that we can have upward mobility, so that a zip code is not your destiny.
Right.
That is what I would say. And then please look at our website, see what we're doing, and join us in this effort to make Charlotte a welcoming global city that is inclusive and wants to be a city that is recognized globally as a place to come to. Obviously, lots of people are coming here for economic opportunity,
right,
but not everyone is gaining from that boom that's occurring here. We need to distribute that, and we need to be willing to do that as a community.
Well, I really appreciate you taking this time to speak with me, and you're always welcome back on if there's new programs or new information you would like to share with the Charlotte metro area. I would love to have you on again. And like I said, you have my full 100% support on what your organization is doing, and I will do my part to get the information out as well as support your efforts, even if it's just making masks or, you know, that's my thing. If I can give you 1,000 masks, I would, but I only have one sewing machine.
Thank you very much. We have distributed those masks to our families and to our staff. Mm-hmm. We greatly appreciate that. We appreciate this time, and thank you very much.
You're welcome. And I look forward to speaking with you again.
Yes, likewise.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of A Nest for Every Nester. If you know of a family or your family is experiencing or at risk of experiencing homelessness due to COVID-19, please contact Charlotte Family Housing. You can log onto their website at www.charlottefamilyhousing.org. Again, I'm Shelley Spates with Shelley Realty Co. and Allen Tate Realtors in Ballantyne. And until next time, be well and stay safe.